This call is being recorded.
Shango, Mojuba.
Clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that writing. John the Revelator wrote the book of the seventh seal. Who's that writing? John the Revelator. Tell me who's that writing? John the Revelator. Well, who's that writing? John the Revelator wrote the book of the seventh seal. You know, God walked down in the cool of the day, called Adam by his name. And he refused to answer because he's naked and ashamed. Who's that writing? John the Revelator. Who's that writing? John the Revelator. Who's that writing? John the Revelator wrote the book of the seventh seal. You know Christ had 12 apostles and 3 he led away. Say, watch with me 1 hour till I go yon and pray. Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding? John the Revelator. Who's that riding? John the Revelator. Wrote the book of the seven seas. Who's that riding? John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding? John the Revelator. Who's that riding? John the Revelator. Wrote the book of the seven seas. Christ came on the Easter morning. Mary and Martha was down to see. Go tell my disciples to meet me in Galilee. Tell me who's riding John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding John the Revelator. Wrote the book of the seven seals. Who's that riding? John the Revelator. Who's that riding? John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding? John.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Up you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to another edition of the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host this evening. And we are here every Tuesday evening from 8 p.m. Eastern Time to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 Central to 9 Central. We thank you for joining us, all of our audience, our very dedicated audience. We appreciate your emails and your letters that come to us quite often, and inquiring, making suggestions, criticisms, whatever you want to do. And we appreciate you, and we want you to continue to do that. So thank you so much, my brothers and sisters, for your participation in this program. The program is sponsored by Motherland Media Network out of Atlanta, Georgia. It is also produced and directed by the Sankofa Historical Society. And we have been now broadcasting on this network, which is timeforanawakening.com, for a couple of years, and we're just so happy to do so. We are part of a team of wonderful broadcasters who are here on various times and days of the week for trying to provide an awakening for our people. That's why it's called timeforanawakening.com. And we are part of the blacktalkradionetwork.com as well, which is the number one black podcast system on the planet. Not in America, on the planet, because internet is obviously international. And it was rated by an independent body. So we didn't rate ourselves. We were rated by an independent body who have found this to be a worthy system of broadcasting news and information related to African people. We suggest that you go to the website sometime at your leisure, www.timeforanawakening.com, and just look at the plethora of programs that are there that are designed to stimulate and agitate and to invigorate our listeners and to get you to dialogue with each other. We've got to fight for change. We've got to write new agendas for our people to be able to survive in the upcoming 21st and the 22nd century. Well, it's already the 21st, but as we move into the more deeper areas of that century, we must prepare our children. And so this is what we've designed and this program is set up to do. As I said, so we're here every Tuesday from 7 Central, 8 Eastern, PM, right here, timeforanawakening.com. And so we appreciate you. We're happy to be here. Tonight we have a very interesting topic. We've got a wonderful group of guests that are already on, lurched. It's going to just be an open conversation. And we're going to ask the question about the President of the United States. We're going to ask. And we're not going to ask, should he be impeached? Because I think we all would get the same answer on that one. What we're going to ask is, will he be impeached, considering the body politic of American life, considering the bureaucracy of the federal system, and all of the things that have taken place? What will happen with this president as he continues to fall and as he continues to to be inundated with all of these horrible things that have been done? So we are asking that from an African-American perspective, will Donald Trump be impeached? What do you think? And like I said, we have a dynamic body of brothers and sisters that are online right now who are prepared to help us to discuss. And like I said, this is a think tank. We don't have any answers. When I say that, we're not claiming to be all right. We just want to talk about it, discuss it. And I'm sure that many of you are doing so in your circles of life. And even if you don't participate in the political structure system in America, it still is an issue that obviously does plague us. And we're going to talk about that tonight, and we're going to get right into that very shortly. But as you know, we always like to do our ancestral profile, which is a very key component of the Black Reality Think Tank, because we stand on the shoulders of greatness. We stand on the shoulders of our ancestors, and we do not want them to forget them. We do not want them to know that we do not remember what they've done, the way that they have paid. Someday, sometime, we will be an ancestor. And in that realm of things, we would like for our followers to also do the same, to honor what we have done and tried to do, whether we were successful or not successful. But we tried. We stayed on the battlefield. We tried to fight. We tried to do the things that would help create a better generation. And so we are paying honor tonight to our ancestors. We want to pay to a dear brother. He is the homeboy of one of our listeners, Brother Timothy. This is your homeboy that we're going to talk about tonight. His name is Absalom Jones. Absalom Jones, A-B-S-A-L-O-M, Jones. Absalom Jones was born into captivity in Sussex, Delaware, in 1746. He taught himself to read in his early teens from books he purchased by saving pennies given to him by visitors to his master's home. At the age of 16, Absalom Jones' family was separated when his immediate family members were sold and he was taken to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania by his new owner. Jones worked as a clerk in his owner's store by day and was allowed to work for himself and attend an all-black school at night. In 1770, Absalom Jones married a fellow captive, enslaved African, and through hard work and the help of friends and his father-in-law, he was able to buy his wife's freedom. Jones saved enough to purchase his own freedom in 1784. He was an active member of the St. George Methodist Episcopal Church in Philadelphia, and he served as a lay preacher for the black members of the congregation. In 1786, Richard Allen joined Jones at the church, and their futures would forever be entwined. The black membership at St. George increased tenfold as a result of the evangelistic efforts of Absalom Jones and Richard Allen. But this increase was not welcomed by the white members of the congregation. Instead of praising their efforts, church officials responded by attempting to segregate the black congregants. During a Sunday service on November 1786, ushers attempted to remove all blacks, including Jones, from the main floor of the church to the balcony. Absalom Jones and Richard Allen and the black members of the congregation promptly left the church as a group. Absalom Jones and Richard Allen subsequently founded the Free African Society on April the 12th, 1787. Members of this organization, they met regularly and paid dues which were used to benefit those in need. The organization was crucial in caring for the sick and dying of Philadelphia when a yellow fever epidemic swept the city in 1793. Out of this society grew the African Church, which was organized on July the 7th, 1791. Both Jones and Allen wanted to remain affiliated with the Methodist Church, but their followers overwhelmingly voted to affiliate themselves with the Episcopal Church as a result of their persecution by the Methodists at St. George. Allen disagreed with this decision And he withdrew from the African church, taking a small number of followers with him. Jones remained as the leader of the African church, which was formally received into the Episcopal Diocese of Pennsylvania on October 17, 1794. It remained the St. Thomas African Episcopal Church. St. Thomas was the first black Episcopal parish in the United States. Bishop William White, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Pennsylvania, ordained Jones a deacon in the Episcopal Church in 1795 and as priest in 1804. Jones became the first ordained priest of the African descent in the United States. Despite the split in the African church, Jones and Allen continued to work together. They were among the founders of the African Masonic Lodge in Philadelphia in 1798. The two men also led the black community in petitioning the Pennsylvania State Legislature for the abolition of slavery in 1799. In 1800, they sent a similar petition to the United States Congress. Jones and Allen also founded the Society for the Suppression of Vice and Immortality in 1809. In 1816, Jones saw his friend Allen consecrated the first bishop of the newly formed African Methodist Episcopal Church, better known today as the AME Church. And in 1817, the two men were united again when they condemned the newly formed American Colonization Society, which encouraged free Africans to return to Africa. 1 year later, Absalom Jones died at his home in Philadelphia on February 13, 1818. Absalom Jones. One of the reasons that we do these profiles outside of giving respect and honor to our ancestors is we try to choose individuals that were really revolutionary in terms of the work that they did and the fact that they were forced to go up against insurmountable odds sometimes. And so we wanted you to always know that even though these things were tough, they were powerful challenges, that they stayed on the battlefield and continued to fight. And so we do that as an encouragement to all of you who are fighting every day out there to try to change things, and you keep bumping into barriers and doors shutting in your face and all kinds of things that go on in the struggle. But as you can see, our ancestors did not stop. They kept going. And so very powerful. One other thing I want to mention about this particular bio about our good brother from Philadelphia, Absalom Jones, is that one of the things is that toward the end of the time, this whole colonization, abolitionist process was in place. But a lot of our ancestors rejected the American colonization movement. They also rejected a lot of the abolitionist effort, because a lot of it was, for a better word, poppycock. It didn't mean anything. There was a lot of different agendas that were into the implementing and planning of American colonization, as well as into the abolitionist movement. Obviously, there were a lot of our brothers and sisters that were involved in that, and they were sincere, and they were looking at a different window. But some of the others, particularly some of the white brothers and sisters, were not. They were looking at it for personal gain and personal reasons and vendettas against others. So at some time, this is a good discussion. We may attempt to take that on in one of our programs and look at the abolitionists and the colonization movement. Kind of reminds me of the civil rights movement in somewhat, just a little bit, because the same thing. You had a whole lot of different agendas that were part of those movements, and we thought that they were fighting for better opportunities, liberation, right to vote, right to do this and right to do that. But in a lot of cases, it was just hidden agendas here, and it was not done for that reason. one of the big arguments is the Communist Party and their involvement in the civil rights movement and what they were after. And it's like one brother, and excuse my expression, one brother was critiquing Karl Marx and looking at the whole principle of communism. And he raised the question, and I'm going to use this. I know we don't like to use the word, but he raised the question in a book. He actually wrote a book called How Many Niggers Did Karl Marx Know? So everybody that was hollering and screaming about embracing communism as a way of change, you know, Karl Marx didn't know anything about no black folks, you know, so, but yet it was used. And I mean, they gave their money. They fought for a lot of rights. I know the Scottsboro Boys, in that trial, there was the Communist Party that funded the legal team that fought for the Scottsboro Boys. But again, why? Why did they do that? So anyway, that's another story for another day, and we may take a look at that. Tonight, we're going to talk about your wonderful president. I know all of you love him to death, so I'm not going to make you mad. I hope I don't make you mad by talking about him. But anyway, he needs to be talked about, and he's now on the verge of possibly some type of political action. We keep hearing the word impeach. I don't know if that's the case, but we want to ask our brothers and sisters from an African perspective, is that the case? Is he being impeached? Is he going to be impeached? Why will he be impeached? What good does he do? And then I have another question that we're going to strike at tonight as well in this whole discussion, is what did he really do? I mean, did he do anything to get impeached from what we can see and what we hear? We're all manipulated by the media, so we don't know much outside of what the media tells us. So you think that that's right, or is it, as he says, as he often said, is it fake news? What is the deal? You know, what is it about him? And so I asked my good friends who come on, I've asked Brother James Pugh to come on, and let's take it out. So I'm going to go to him and ask him to let's take a stab at this. And I see that we have my good brother from down in Alabama that's on, so I really want to hear what he's got to say. I'm so happy that he has become a part of our regular listenership, Brother Lush, out of Huntsville, Alabama. I quite often hear from him. I really appreciate him and his input and his comments. And then Brother Herbie White's on, and always my good friend, Brother Timothy. He never lets me down. So we want you all to say, so we're going to let Brother Pugh start off, and then while all of you can be thinking your thoughts. Brother Pugh, are we going to be saying bye-bye to Donald Trump soon?
Well, you're asking a different question. You're asking, will he be convicted? You at first asked, will he be impeached?
Okay.
He'll certainly be impeached. They already have the votes in the House to do that.
Okay.
Whether or not he'll be convicted, well, there are some signs that there's some erosion of Trump support. But that's going to be, that's going to be a long ball. But the signs of the erosion is one of the things is, the fact that increasingly whistleblowers and inside people now are beginning to speak out, you know, this Bolton thing, him saying he didn't want to be involved in a drug deal, you know, characterizing, you know, what they were doing up in there as drug dealing.
Sound like the Godfather to me. What do you think?
excuse me?
I said, sounds like the Godfather to me.
Oh, yeah, without question, yeah. In fact, if you really want to understand what's going on, watch the Godfather, and they'll tell you everything about what's
right.
going on.
Exactly.
In fact, you know, one of the things is this idea of intimidating witnesses and doing some ugly things to witnesses. You know, that's part of the game, too. And, you know, there's nothing off the table with Trump.
Right,
and,
right.
But but the other indication is that you know, one of the things you're seeing some erosion. You know, ordinarily, you know, there's this 40%, you know, floor that Trump has. It doesn't get any higher than that, but it doesn't get any lower either. Well, one of the things you're finding is that that's getting lower, that you're finding, you know, like anywhere from like 8 to 12% of, you know, folks in that Trump base, you know, who are talking about impeachment, even removal. And then the final thing, just to end it, CNN did a thing where they were interviewing people, and what they noticed was a reverse Bradley effect. If you remember the Bradley effect, where, you know, they would say they're going to vote for Bradley, right, you know, to the media, but then when they get in the booth, they do something different. Mm-hmm. Well, what CNN found is that when they would be on camera, they'd be supporting Trump. But then as soon as the camera turned away, then all of a sudden some of the other things came out. So he will be impeached. And the Democrats are doing what they can do to see if they can shake 20 of those Republicans so he can get convicted.
Right. Let me ask you, and if you're not comfortable in doing it, that'll be okay, because I know I didn't preliminarily ask you about it. Can you, just for our listening audience who may not be aware, do you know the steps for impeachment? Are you familiar with those enough to maybe let's talk about it a little bit? You can maybe just start them off, and then some of us can pick up on what some of the others are.
Well, the impeachment is that there has to be a decision by the House that, okay, you know, the House votes on it. You know, some articles of impeachment are drafted,
right,
and you know. And so basically, if you remember the Nixon impeachment, you know, right, where they, you know, say, hey, you know, I believe he did this, this, and this. And then the House gets together and see if they agree. Now, if they agree that he did it, then he and they're a majority, then he's impeached. But then it becomes then it goes to the Senate.
Right.
And that's where the conviction happens.
Exactly. Exactly.
And in fact, one of the ways to kind of understand that is that, you know, in a jury trial, that's a legal proceeding. And so you have these jurors and you have this prosecutor, and he presents elements that says this person committed a crime. Mm-hmm. And then the job of the jury is to judge whether or not by those elements there's, you know, there's any reasonable doubt.
Right.
Well, in this case, the Senate is playing the role of the jury.
Right.
And their job is to judge, you know, whether or not those elements were met. But the difference between the jury and the Senate is that the jury is sequestered from the world. You know, they're sequestered from the public, whereas the Senate, what's going to cause them to vote for conviction is that they have to feel that, you know, that whatever they do, their constituency will support them. And so that's what Pelosi and them are doing now, is mm-hmm. doing the work to essentially create the atmosphere to make it impossible for Republicans not to do the right thing.
Right.
It's sort of like Lyndon Johnson said to LBJ, "Make me do it." Excuse me, to Martin Luther King, "Make me do it." In other words, create. Or Lincoln.
Right.
Lincoln said it when he said, "You know, without public opinion, you can't do anything, but with it, you can do everything."
You can do everything.
Well, that's
true.
What's being done now. The that's work is being done to create public opinion.
Thank you for that. Thank you, because that is important for our listening audience. So we basically, what Mr. Pugh said, it was a three-step process. You have the Congress that investigates whether there's a worthy cause or reason to impeach. And then the second step is for the House of Representatives has to vote and pass on it. By a simple majority of those present and voting. So you have to be present and voting at that time. The articles of impeachment, which basically constitute the formal allegations or the allegations of what's being brought forward. And then at that point, the third, the Senate, has to then try him in a court of law kind of style. But as he said there, all of that has its political connotations to it. And so those are things that have to go. So that's what we are looking at. So we're trying to ask the question in the midst of those three points. Is that going to happen here in America, in the politics? Do you think that would happen? Let me ask, he's not new. He's been listening now for a while, Brother Lush. I don't know whether you want to talk right now or not. But if you do, I'd really love to have your input. I mean, your remarks and your suggestions in the past have been very valuable. Would you like to comment? Are we going to say goodbye to the president very soon? Brother Lush, are you there? Okay, maybe not. Okay. All right, so, Brother White, my good friend Herbie White, my homeboy. What do you think, Brother White? Are we going to say bye-bye to Donald Trump?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers and everyone else on the panel.
Good evening, my
The issue is, if he's impeached, it will be because of a difference of opinion among criminals.
Okay.
It won't have anything to do with what justice or right and wrong. If Donald Trump is no different than any other president of the United States because of the charter of America, imperialism, capitalism, and all the other crimes that they commit, and every president takes part in that, Donald Trump is more obnoxious and bombastic than other presidents.
Right.
Obama was suave and gentlemanly and everything, but he was just a bigger criminal as Donald Trump. A lot of people won't agree with me on that, but that's the truth.
Right.
It doesn't matter who's the president. Policy is what is important, the policy of America. If you get on the Amtrak going to Miami, it doesn't matter who the engineer is. The train is still going to Miami.
Right.
So it doesn't matter who's in the seat of the If Donald Trump is impeached, if he's removed from office, then Pence becomes the president.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, you got six in one hand and half a dozen in the other.
I see.
So all of this is just a game being played out among criminals to disagree on how they feel about each other.
Right. Okay. And it is, you know, and I mean... I know Brother Pugh was talking about some of the allegations that are coming up about whether or not he was wanted to be part of the drug deal. You remember in The Godfather, that was an issue. They wanted The Godfather to sell drugs, and he didn't want to get into the drug business because he said it was a dirty business. He didn't want to get in it. So he got out, and then that created all kind of havoc. They went after him, came after a hit, you know, and so forth and so on. And if this is the case, it may be some of that we see now in all of this thing. So you're right. You're right about that. I think that we got some gangster action going on here. And very clearly, it's going to be played out in the next few days, or at least the next couple of months or so as we move forward. But it's interesting. Anything else, Brother White, you want to add on that?
No, well, you know, like I said... United States doesn't have any problem with doing business with Russia or any other place. I mean, during World War II, you know, the Bush family was dealing with Hitler,
right.
Through the Brown Brothers and Hammond Bank and all of that kind of stuff and over there in Switzerland and everything. So it wasn't a matter of principle, you know. So this country has, if you understand American history, really American foreign policy and whatnot, they've all been criminals working with whoever, you know, had the same interest.
Right.
Drugs and, you know, the war with Afghanistan and all that stuff was about drugs.
Right.
And whatnot, you know, availability of drugs, and you know, and what happened in Central America, all these people that are supposed to be trying to cross the border and whatnot, you just have to review America's foreign policy in Central America and what was done to all of them countries and whatnot under each president that was in office at the time that destabilized these countries and put these people in the position that they're in.
Right.
So it's not about what Donald Trump did with Russia or Ukraine or anything else like that. You know,
yeah.
That's the least of their concern.
I agree.
They'll do business with Lucifer. It don't matter.
Right, exactly. You're right. No doubt about it. Okay, Brother Timothy. What do you think, my brother? Where are you? And then I want to ask you a different question in a minute. What do you think about all this? Is he Is it over for
the game? Well, I'm thinking, sir, and I'm happy to come on, Dr. Rogers, and I'm happy you're on here, too, because last Tuesday, Brother Griffin and Brother Shu and myself, we had a nice conversation, a good symposium amongst ourselves, and we said, you started something, man, and we can't quit it. I want you to know, when you're not around, it's going on. But I'm going to tell you before I get into the conversation of the subject, Malinka's homecoming was this past Saturday. And, you know, I might party with my fraternity brothers, but I'm always there to have a nice intellectual conversation.
Right.
So I ran across Brother Slaughter, who is also an educator, my brother.
Okay.
And he's on the line now. And I told him about our conversations on Tuesdays. So if you see his number come up, he's calling from Alabama.
Oh, that might be him. That might have been when I thought that was Brother Lush. We do have a brother that's on now from Alabama.
That is Brother Slaughter. He's an educator, too, sir. So after I get finished, he may press the button to want to come in.
Well, I hope so. I'm going to go back to him, my brother, at 585-256 area code. I'm going to come back to you. Now that
you
I know
should.
Who you are, I'll come back in just a few minutes. Okay?
That's right. So I'm going to say to you, sir, that I'm like Brother Pugh, that I think he's going to be impeached. And but they want you to think, like you said, you know, there's no honor among thieves, and they're all a bunch of criminals.
Right.
But they have felt as though that Donald Trump wants to do his own thing. Remember, he said, I'm going to drain the swamp. He turns around and turns the whole Republican Party around. And people thought they were more honest than the other ones.
Right.
And he shows you, they just hooked onto the bandwagon.
Right.
They say, we like your style. We like your style. Now, from Washington to Lincoln, from Washington to Lincoln, brothers that are on the line now, and if 59-9 comes on, that'll be good, that if the founding fathers were to say, if from George Washington to Lincoln, if Lincoln, tried to pass the emancipation, the first and second, he's worked on it, the first and second, his second term. If he said, I need China to help me with this next election, they would say, well, we just came from out of the British.
Okay.
So, right, we just came, how are you going to take away what we call independence? We stole land from the Indians. We have shadow slavery. You put the Asians on the railroad. How are you going to? The Asians are coming on it. So he's cramping their style. If you got to do it, man, you got to do it under cover of darkness.
Right.
So
that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Right. They're going to impeach him, but they're not going to convict him. See, that's the difference.
Right.
And I do believe that he will not be reelected. Now, the problem will be that they're looking at the Democratic Party. Matter of fact, the debate is coming on in the next hour. They're looking at who they may pick, but they're not satisfied with the Democratic Party. See, that's going to be the fight.
Right.
Who would be able to replace this criminal that we like his style, but he's cocky? If Trump wasn't so cocky, if he was more disguised, he was more like a Reagan, you know? His thing is that he's so stupid, but he's smart with stupidness that they can't stomach him. They say, you got to be more better.
Right.
In other words, don't let them see all of that. You know, you're covering up stuff that we're trying to hide. So, yeah, he's on his way out. But guess what? What are we going to be replaced with?
There you go. There we go. Okay, good. That's what we go. And I want to talk about that, too, in a few minutes. I'm going to come back to that one. But you're right. What about the replacement? What do we have there? Okay. I'm gonna go back to Brother White. But first, let me just make a quick announcement that you are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We're here every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time, 8 to 10 Eastern. This is a call-in format. If any of you are listening audience on the internet would like to give us a call and state your opinion or either ask a question, you can do so at area code 215-490-9832. And I repeat, area code 215-490-9832. And I will see you on the switchboard and and give you a chance to raise a question or either to make a comment. We'd love to have you come on and give us your idea. We're doing this from an African perspective. We really want to be able to see this from a different lens. And we do. We view politics from an African-American do politics from a different lens. Most of us do, at least. And one of the reasons why I think it's necessary, like, for instance, we're talking about you keep hearing in the news that he went to the Ukraine or he went to China. And in a sense, that we need to pay attention to, because politics in America is an international game. It's about the international connections of things. So in a sense, that is the best place to go, because you can go outside of the rules and regulations of operating right here on a domestic level. The money, just like the money in America, is international money. It is not just domestic money. Apple, IBM, Amazon is not just domestic wealth. That is international wealth. The stockholders list, if you could had the privilege of being able to look at the preferred stockholders of Apple or Amazon, you will probably see over 50% is outside of the United States. So very clearly, if there was going to be something that you need to have and you were the sitting president, you might want to look internationally at getting some support. So don't think that that's an odd factor. That is not odd. That's the way all presidents work, as Mr. Pugh said earlier, or our Brother White said earlier. You know, they all do that. They have to do it in a certain sense, and they have to look outside a lot of times to do it. But it's being raised. I mean, it's, I guess a question is, you're supposed to get permission to do it. I think that's the problem. It's not that you can't do it. You're just supposed to get permission to do it. But I want to ask Brother White. Brother White, you and I are in that same kind of age category. How do you see this in similarity to the Nixon situation? And I know both Mr. Pugh and yourself mentioned Richard Nixon. Now, Nixon ended up having to resign, and his whole matter was a little bit different, I think. But it still was, nevertheless, the power brokers. He crossed somebody's, you know, the Watergate was the front piece, but there was some behind-the-scenes stuff that was different than the Watergate stuff that took Richard Nixon out. What do you see similar in this situation with Trump and Nixon? Do you see any similarities?
Yeah, I see a lot of similarities that both of them had been lifelong criminals. Both of them had been lifelong charlatans and tricksters and whatnot. They did not really fit in with the mainstream criminals. See, like I said earlier, Donald Trump is very bombastic and very obnoxious and stuff like that, and he doesn't care who he tramples on, so he's a criminal without refinement.
Okay.
Nixon's name was Tricky Dick. They knew about this criminal behavior long before, and so I think that probably after he got into office and started doing some things that people in the international financial area felt needed to be removed.
Okay.
And the same thing may be happening with Donald Trump, because he's doing what other presidents do, but he's bumbling around and stumbling around, and he's not doing it with refinement and the class that he's supposed to be doing it with.
Right, exactly. So people are thumbing their nose at that. My brother down in Alabama, 256-585. Is there anything you'd like to add to this discussion? First of all, I'm glad to have you on the air listening. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you, Brother Timothy, for inviting him. So what do you think?
Yeah, well, glad to be on. And I would say, though, that this whole impeachment process, as some of you pointed out, you know, it's a political issue. And, of course, that means that it's not necessarily based on specific judicial facts.
Right.
So part of it is definitely in terms of what is happening in the political arena. And while all of them may do it, there are certain specific norms that all presidents also have to be comfortable with or abide by. And clearly, I think he has overstepped those bounds. And so as the evidence mounts, and now we see whistleblower after whistleblower,
right.
And we see other individuals coming out that are confirming this evidence, I think it's clear that he will be impeached, as we say, by the House. But I think this is also supplemented by his declining stature on the heels of the Mueller investigation,
mm-hmm.
what is happening in Turkey, the cracks in his base among even some Republicans, even among his base itself in terms of the general public, the farmers and so forth. So that gives momentum to this whole process that he's a weakened individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I'm not convinced that he will be convicted by the Senate. I think they would rally to save him in terms of they see that as saving their own skin.
Right.
But Trump is also such an egomaniac that his notion of his own personal legacy, that I think that he would possibly resign and simply walk off and say, listen, I was the greatest president ever. There was nothing else left for me to do anyway.
Right.
I can leave this whole thing behind. But I think that at this point, there's so many things that are going wrong for him. The people are starting to flee. He's become a liability, not only to himself, but to the other Republicans and perhaps their possibility to continue to be successful in terms of their own political office. That's why I do think the momentum is there clearly for impeachment.
Powerful, powerful. Thank you so much. Powerful. And listen, again, I appreciate you coming on. Please continue to listen. We try to present a very innovative dialogue from an open mind perspective. As I said, this is a think tank, so we're not trying to write policy or anything like that. We're just trying to help people think through some of the things that affect our lives. So I appreciate you. Appreciate you so much. Thank you, Brother Pugh. Let me ask you. Let's jump a minute and. And I know you had been a part of the discussion previously we had on the Black Reality Think Tank back during the beginning of the election of Donald Trump. And even when we did a couple of end-of-the-year roundups after the first year in office, we all came on and we kind of gave our input. Brother Timothy, you were part of that discussion as well. And I'm going to ask both of you all, because you were part of that, let's go back and review, if you could, for me. How was it possible? What was the whole politic behind electing a man like Donald Trump to the president? What is it that you think he had that the power base? Because you know I'm sure you know that the popular vote doesn't necessarily elect a president. It has to be that power base that obviously makes that happen. What was it that he offered the power base that he would be allowed to come into a position like the one he holds now? What do you think was behind that? And Brother Timothy, I'm going to ask you the same thing in a minute.
So, well, he obviously... he's one of them. In fact, he gave them a $1.5 trillion tax cut. So, and then he's given them deregulation. So, it was understood that he was basically anti-democratic. He felt that billionaires should rule, and that's what he offered them. In other words, rather than the game that Brother White would talk about, where power is being wielded in the dark. Trump wanted to wield that power in the light.
Okay.
And in fact, that's really where we're actually, there's really more to be said. But one of the things is, remember Samuel Huntington in his Clash of Civilizations, he said power only works in the dark.
Okay.
And so, these people, who dislike Trump, that is, who like his policies but dislike his manner, It's because they're saying, man, you know, you're destroying, you know, this golden calf. You know, we got to, you know, we got to keep a skirt on this policy. But,
excellent. Yeah, excellent. Okay.
But you know, can I say something else about the strategy for you know, one of the things is that what Nancy Pelosi is doing, if you remember what the Republicans did with Hillary Clinton and Benghazi, the whole idea was they knew she was going to be running. And so they basically softened her up by having all of these hearings, which raised all kind of questions about her character and her honesty, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's what Nancy wants to do with Trump, that if he's not removed, they want to beat him up so bad that he no longer has that glow. You know, he had that glow when he was elected. You asked how he got elected, that he was a winner, that he was a billionaire, that, you know, he could help you do what he did, that he could out-negotiate anybody.
Right.
Well, she wants to take all of that shine off of him. And in addition, she wants to essentially get him established as, aside from being just a common, ordinary criminal and a straight-up dope dealer and everything else you can possibly be, he's somebody who's committed treason. And these have deleterious effects on America. She wants all of that stuff established. She wants it established in plain terms, not that kind of Mueller-type talk where only lawyers can understand. And then she wants to force the Republicans to support somebody like that, because she understands that even though it's clear a Democrat is going to win in 2020, the only way the Democrats can do anything and not get hamstrung like Obama did is that you've got to have the Senate. And that means that the Republicans in the Senate have to be discredited.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good observation. Great observation, because you're right. There's no way you can be able to bulk get anything done, a Democrat, in particular. And I know that Biden, who's probably the closest one that would probably get elected, Biden probably would not be able to maneuver that, even though a lot of the old boys, the good old boys of the Senate with the Republicans were his friends over the years, but that's not going to help him at all. That's not going to help him at all.
Let me make one more quick point.
Okay.
Okay. Now this is to Brother Wright and his cynicism. You know, since the beginning of America, there's been this tension. There's been one group that's always wanted America to be an empire. There's been another group, the people, who've always wanted America to be democracy. And there's been that tension. What Trump represents is basically the triumph of the empire forces.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what he would like to do is end any pretense of democracy and just go to straight up empire. Well, black people, we lose with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more in our interest to move this society in the direction of empire, because that's, excuse me, in the direction of democracy. Because if you want a society where black people have control, that is, you know, the freedom from fear, the freedom to speak, the freedom from warning, the freedom to worship. In other words, if you want a society where black people can function as whole human beings, then the path to that society is through American democracy.
Okay.
Because one of the things you realize in the world today, in fact, you see it with this China, this billion-dollar, you know, when the NBA capitulated with China on the Hong Kong thing.
Right.
The whole ideal is that the people in Hong Kong are saying, you know, that they want democracy. LeBron James and some people in the NBA spoke up. China threatened to eliminate, you know, a 1.4 billion people market, and all of a sudden that silenced the NBA. Well, one of the things is that, you know, as black people, we depend upon public opinion. That was Martin Luther King's main hand. That's why he had, you know, the holes his own kids, is to essentially shame America, you know, in front of the world. And so for us to create the kind of world that Donald Trump wants, where gangsters can do whatever they want to do to their people and to anybody else if they're big enough to do it to, that's not in our interest. So So yes, you're correct, brother. Right? So, yeah, they've been gangsters all along, but it's not in our interest to reify that.
Right.
It's our job to show them what it means to be a human being, to show them that it's possible for them to have a better life living as human beings than living as gangsters.
Okay, just so we all be on the same page, how are you defining empire as you're using it here? What is an empire as you're describing it?
Right, an empire is a pyramid. In other words, in the sacred world, one of the things that you have, it's always a circle. So any role that I play, in other words, any role that my community plays in the society, in other words, you've got people who are in families. These families are part of communities. These communities are part of society. But it turns out that when you have a democracy, any role that my community plays in the society, your community can play in a society.
Okay.
But when you have an empire, you've got a pyramid where there are some things I can do at the bottom of the pyramid, and there's some things people can do in the middle, and some things people can do at the top.
Right.
But there's no interaction between these levels.
Gotcha.
And so those are inherently unstable because nobody wants to be in the bottom.
Right.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. Good enough. Thank you. Brother White, before I go over to Brother Timothy, anything you want to add to his remarks about what you said?
There is no such thing as a good white person. No such thing. That democratic force of white people was just assistance of the non-democratic force. They have never in this country seen any white man raise his hand to another white man to prevent what was happening to black people, to Native Americans, or any other people who are being subjugated. So you had that democratic force, but that democratic force never did anything.
Okay.
You had the church, and the church, all the good people in the church, never did nothing about the bad people outside of the church.
Right.
They're all one and the same. They just play different roles. None of them is ever any good, and you're never going to convince white people in this country to act decent. That's impossible.
Yes.
It's not happening. History bears that out. They've had the opportunity for 400 years,
mm-hmm.
for 400 years to do the right thing, and they haven't done it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But nobody.
Okay. All right. I don't think you have too many people disagree with you on that, at least African Americans. We got a caller on area code. Actually, doesn't have his code. It's from Detroit zone. Obviously, a new caller. Caller, are you just listening, or would you like to add something to this conversation? Good afternoon, my sir. Caller from Detroit area. This is at least my switchboard says you're from the Detroit zone. Would you like to say something, or are you just listening? Okay, so maybe you're just listening. Okay, Brother Timothy, how in the world could a man like Donald Trump be elected in this aristocratic society that we live in here in the called America? How was that possible? What is it that he had to offer to power that would make them okay and give him the nod to come in as president of the United States?
Because America was able to produce two men during my time period. I was young when they existed, and they always want to discredit these people. One was produced by Elijah Muhammad. The other was produced by the black church. And they gave you an analogy. Malcolm said that American democracy is hypocrisy. And King did better with the Constitution than the founders that wrote it. And they're going to always make you know that they're discredited. But they step up like angels. Like angels.
Mm-hmm.
You had a man like Benton who backed Trump and showed him where all the people, Hillary called them implorables. She was exactly right. He showed them where the base was to pull this crooked deal off with the Electoral College that should be destroyed. They know their country that they took from the Indians to put us in shadow slavery. Mm-hmm. They know their government. They know their electoral politics. He said, I could pull this off. He said, you had a man who did 8 years, and he's looked at black people like the saint, and we want to erase that. And I'll tell you that if the white man can erase anything that's black and make it look bad, he'll do it. He'll make a movie Rocky to discredit Ali. Mm-hmm. So you know that he will make something to degrade anything that looks good to us or almost excellent and perfect. So a man like Donald Trump can exist because they got to always remove who we are, the original people on the planet.
Okay.
And that's I'll tell you that Brother Slaughter, that Brother Pugh, and Brother White will all agree with that, that as long as the white man is stepping on us, he feels as though that he's doing the right thing, because he's not going to never let you see him and us as equal. Okay. That's racism. Anytime you're going to shoot a woman in Texas doing nothing, they're shooting people in their homes, man. They're doing nothing.
Yeah.
And they find a way to get away with it. They're going to try to let this white boy off and say, oh, he made a mistake. Right. Guarantee you.
Powerful.
They say racism, man, it's not going nowhere.
Powerful.
That's what America's built on. Yeah. Racism, crime, drugs, and disease.
Powerful. Exactly. Okay. You are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 Central Time, 8 to 10 Eastern Time. We are on the www.timeforanawakening.com network, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network, which is the number one podcast African-American network in the world, not just the nation, in the world. We're so happy to be a part of this system. For those of you who are interested in looking at some of the other programs that appear on this network, please go to www.timeforanawakening.com, and you can just look at the array of programs that do air. On Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, our sponsor, which is Motherland Media Network, comes on from 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Central Time, to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Central Time on the Time for an Awakening Network. It's called African Perspectives, and the host of that program is Brother Oshiemi Adelabu, a very dynamic program, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then on every Friday and Sunday, the managerial system of the radio network, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, come on with a program called Time for an Awakening. It airs every Friday and Sunday, Friday from 8 to 10 Eastern, 7 to 9 Central, and every Sunday from 7 to 10 Eastern, 6 to 9 Central. And dynamic program, a lot of guests, various people from our community, from the African Senate community, talking about ideas such as the one we're talking about tonight, as well as other things. I think he has a very dynamic program he's planning for this Sunday. He's going to talk about the black church a little bit. How is it that some of the things that have happened could have happened in the name of religion? So he'll be more specific. But anyway, be sure to check it out. Dynamic program. Every Friday and Sunday, Friday from 8 to 10 Eastern, 7 to 9, and every Sunday from 7 to 10, 7 to 10, and 6 to 9 Central. And so be sure to do that. And we have other programs, as I said, though, please go on the internet. All of our programs are archived. You can go up into the archive section and pull down and listen to any of the programs from previous recordings and do so anytime, 24/7 a day. We're going to take a quick break. If you would like to come on and give your suggestion, ask a question, please do so. You can call 215 area code 490-9832. I repeat, 215-490-9832. So let's take a quick break, and we go break. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to come right back with more discussion on your wonderful president, Donald Trump.
I'm speaking as a black man from America, which is a racist society. No matter how much you hear it talk about democracy, it's as racist as South Africa, or as racist as Portugal, or as racist as any other racialist society on this earth. The only difference between it and South Africa preaches separation and practices separation. America preaches integration and practices segregation. This is the only difference. They don't practice what they preach. Whereas South Africa preaches and practices the same thing. I have more respect for a man who lets me know where he stands, even if he's wrong, than the one who comes up like an angel and is nothing but a devil. There are 16 senatorial committees that govern the country and 20 congressional committees. 10 of the 16 senatorial committees are in the hands of Southern racialists, senators, who are racialists. 13 of the 20, about this was before the last election, I think it's even more so now. 10 of the 16 committees, senatorial committees, are in the hands of senators who are Southern racialists. 13 of the 20 congressional committees were in the hands of Southern congressmen who are racialists. Which means out of the 36 committees that govern the foreign and domestic direction of that government, 23 are in the hands of Southern racialists. Men who in no way believe in the equality of man, and men who do anything within their power to see that the black man never gets to the same seat or to the same level that they are on. The reason that these men from that area have that type of power is because America has a seniority system. And these who have that seniority have been there longer than anyone else because the black people in the areas where they live can't vote. And it is only because the black man is deprived of his vote that puts these men in positions of power that gives them such influence in the government beyond their actual intellectual or political ability, or even beyond the number of people from the areas that they represent. So we can see in that country that no matter what the federal government professes to be doing, the power of the federal government lies in these committees. And any time a black man or any kind of legislation is proposed to benefit the black man or give the black man his just due, we find that it's locked up in these committees right here. And when they let something through the committee, usually it is so chopped up and fixed up that by the time it becomes law, it's a law that can't be enforced.
Well, just as in World War II, this country could use its news media to propagandize and make the whole American public love the Germans and the Japanese, rather love the Russians and the Chinese and hate the Germans and the Japanese. And then after the war, they changed it and made the American public love the Germans and love the Japanese, hate the Russians and hate the Chinese, which shows that they can make the American public love whom they will and hate whom they will. And that same process can be used to re-educate the American public and show white people how to love black people and show black people how to do something to stand on our own feet and solve our own problems. The black man doesn't have to be taught to love the white man. The white man has to be taught to love the black man. But I will invite you.
If man is the father, the sun is the center of the earth, in the middle of the universe, then why is this verse coming 6 times rehearsed? Don't freestyle much, but I write them like such.
Word.
Amongst the fiends controlled by the screens, what does it all mean, all this I'm seeing? Human beings screaming vocal javelins, sign of a local unraveling.
Uh-huh.
My wandering got my wondering, with crisis and all this crisis. Hating Satan never knew what nice is. Check the papers, well, I bet on ISIS. More than your eye can see and ears can hear. Year by year, all the sense disappears. Nonsense perseveres, prayers lifts with fear. Beware, 2 triple O's.
It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, behind the game. I got game, she got game, we got game, they got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but the game if it ain't saying nothing. Damn.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you, my brothers and sisters. We are back We are talking politics. We have a few of our very good friends who are sharing their thoughts on the possible impeachment of the President of the United States and whether that's possible from an African-American perspective. Brother Marcus, do you love your president or what? Brother Marcus.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm here. You hear me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. Yes, yes, indeed.
Oh, okay, good, brother.
You say, I must be crazy to ask you that question.
No, you know, I am not a Trump supporter. But I have to look at the barometer of the country, you see?
Right.
Now, we have to remember that when the whole thing for white people was we have to take our country back. That was the thing when Obama, when they at the end of Obama's term, we have to take our country back. We have to take our country back.
Right.
So those 66 million people, they went and voted for this guy. And they've been trying to impeach him since he been in office. Okay?
Right.
Remember,
right.
They tried to impeach him with the Russian thing. No. This here thing here, I don't think he going anywhere. Yes, the guy is awful, you know what I'm saying? But
right.
It's white folks. He represent white folks, you know? He
right.
represent all the qualities that white folk possess, okay?
Right.
Lying,
right.
stealing, yeah, okay? So, I mean, you know, but... What we have to bear in mind, you know, is that, remember, these people didn't like politicians, you know. That's why they voted for this guy.
Okay.
They were anti-politicians, see?
Right.
And that's what these politicians, they ain't really realizing because they're saying only 11% of the nation support these people. See what I'm saying? And he always, when he's in trouble, what he do? He default to his base. See, whenever he's in trouble, he go back to the base because he still has a lot of support.
Right.
See what I'm saying? A lot. Although the media ain't saying he got a lot of support. You see what I'm saying? But they ain't putting that out there because remember now, the globalists is the people who control the TV. You see what I'm saying? So you have a problem with the globalists and he's a nationalist. See, so you got that issue, you know what I'm saying? So it's a lot of, you got voter apathy, voter people, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So really, the country's in a dangerous position. Really, because I think if they manage to get him out of office, you might see this country start to split. These states might start to secede. You
okay.
know what I'm saying?
That's true.
That may be the end of the United States of America.
Right.
So they got to be careful. They're tinkering with dynamite here. So I'm saying, and white folks, there was a poem by Garvey. He said, the Negro slept 1,000 years. The Negro slept 1,000 years
yes,
while
yes.
white men moved along. And so we shed our bitter tears as white men sing their song.
Yes, yes.
Another day has just begun for black and white alike. The white man greets his with his gun. Will Negroes ever strike? Anyway, brother, this is a powerful program.
I love it.
Continue listening. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brother Marcus. I always appreciate you. Thank you so much. Let me ask my brother from Alabama again. This is goes kind of deep, but again, like I said, we're a think tank, and so we like to present ideas that provoke thought and hopefully, in some cases, lead to change in some way. No right or wrong answers per se, but we're looking to try to uncover. The energy of our people, you know, we asking ourselves questions that can do that. What do you think the African woman and the African man here in America needs to position themselves in terms of this political ping pong tennis game that you see all the time. Where do we need to be? What should be our focus? Because I'm sure that there's somebody that might be listening that are from the more nationalist community that said, the hell with all of that stuff. We ain't worried about them white folks and what they're doing. You do our own thing. But you know, it is a political game. There is about governing. It is about public policy and programs that impact us. I think we have to have our hands and fingers on some of this stuff. So how do you think we need to position ourselves as people in this political poppycock that goes on around us all the time? Where do we need to be? What is our thinking? What should be focused on? What should we be telling our children about this political process?
Well, I think, you know, on the individual level, we always have to be trying to improve our own situation, both whether it's educationally, financially,
right,
our involvement in terms of our communities and so forth. And that includes in terms of the political process, whether we like it or not, you know, that process is what, you know, controls the dynamic in which we live. Here in Montgomery, Alabama, for example, we just had a black man elected for the first time because the black community came out.
Right.
You know, you asked the question earlier about Trump. Why did he win? Because many black people didn't come out.
Mm-hmm.
They came out for Obama. And I remember when Obama ran, I saw the lines and I said, you know, this guy's going to win. I saw the same thing when Trump ran. It wasn't just the power elites behind Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He appealed to that white base, and they came out in numbers, and they supported him. And as a number of these speakers have said, and I agree, it was his appeal to the white racist sentiment. Mm-hmm. He made them comfortable being outright racist in terms of that public sentiment, private sentiment. And so they were comfortable with that, and they're still comfortable with that. I think for us to sort of counter that, though, we have to build up our own forces, our own poll numbers, our own voting records, in spite of the opposition and the attempts to undercut that, because that's still going to be a part of the process. It's not going to be easy, but it's a battle that we have to undertake.
Right.
And I agree with Brother Tim. You know, now, you know, all of this is taking a beating on Trump, even as he tries to rally his base. And I agree with him that it's a good strategy. He is weakened at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
While he wants to focus on his reelection, he's having to, you know, fend off all of these various attacks. And that's good. And so we need to continue to contribute to that attack by increasing our poll numbers and being ready to vote in mass numbers to go against this guy if he does run again.
Okay. That's good bottom line logic. Very good bottom line logic. I like that. Thank you. Thank you so much. Brother White, I like your pragmatism as always. What do you think? How do the African man and woman in America need to position themselves on the battlefield here? Where do we need to be focusing our attention in this political mess that we see?
Well, like the brother just said, we need to work among ourselves on a local level, to do as much as we can to provide for ourselves and to work with each other and help each other. We're not going to control, at this point, we're not able to control the federal level, the, you know, presidency and whatnot. Donald Trump won because he appealed to white racism.
Right.
He appealed to Obama backlash, to the fear of black men, and whatnot, make America great again. And the people could not see that this guy was an idiot. They just responded that they were so glad to hear somebody say white people on top again, that they ignored everything else about this guy and whatnot. So now they're stuck with this bumbling idiot and they need to get rid of him because he doesn't have the finesse to do what needs to be done on the part of white people and white imperialism and white finances.
Mm-hmm.
A good politician to be able to talk to you for an hour without saying anything.
Right.
without you not knowing no more than you knew before he even started talking.
Right.
As soon as Donald Trump starts talking, he starts lying, he starts backing up, he gets all confused, you don't even know what day of the week it is. Right. He got an L on the bottom of his left shoe and an R on the bottom of his right shoe. And somebody erased that off, he put his shoes on the wrong feet.
That's true.
That's the only problem with him. He's not playing the game the way the game was supposed to be played, similar to what happened in New York with the gangsters and John Gotti. He was supposed to dial it back. He was not supposed to be out front, flamboyant. He brought too much attention to the game.
Exactly.
And that's what Donald Trump is doing right now. He's stumbling through this, and he's messing up the game the way it's supposed to be played. See, the Democrats are supposed to be on one side, and the Republicans are supposed to be on the other side. There's no difference in them, but they're supposed to appear to be different.
Right.
It's like a rivalry between the Dodgers and the Yankees.
Okay.
But the name of the game is baseball.
Right.
So everybody gets paid. The game of baseball takes care of everybody. So you can be a Dodger today and a Yankee tomorrow. It doesn't make any difference. But that's just to appear to be a rivalry to make people think that they have a choice.
Right. I like that. And very clearly you're right. He did appeal to that racist group. And you know, there's a lot of special interest groups. And I want Brother Timothy and Mr. Pugh, if you would discuss this a little bit. There are very, a lot of special interest groups that were out there. For instance, the white evangelicals, who were very clearly supportive of Trump because of his racism. It wasn't so much any political platform. It was he was just a straight-out racist. That's what they are. You know, there's no hidden secret that the white evangelicals are for whiteness, and they are opposition to a lot of things along those lines. And so he appealed to them, and then there are other special interests as well. So, Mr. Pugh, I want to ask you about one specific, and if you don't want to talk about it, you can. You don't have to because, you know, I know sometimes it's a hotter issue. What do you think the LGBT community stands on all of this in the political game here at Arena? Because we saw a lot of them during the Obama administration. We saw a lot of the LGBT community being very loud in support, you know, a lot of what Obama was doing. We don't hear them too much here. I know there are a lot of, I know Trump did something recent with the transgender group in terms of those bathrooms. But they have not emerged yet in the loud voice that they did in the past presidency. What do you think they're going to fit into this argument?
Oh, the LGBT community is with the black community.
Okay.
They're with the Asian community, with the Indian community, with the Jewish community.
Okay.
In other words, there are about 30% of the population are these white supremacists, these Confederates and Nazis, but most of the people are not with them. The gays and the lesbians and whatnot, in order for them to even have a possibility of living like human beings, they have to have a democracy. And so that's where they are.
Right. Okay. All right, good. I've just been, because that's a real issue. We do kind of attempt sometimes to skate around that because it can be deep. Brother Timothy, because very clearly now there's a lot of discussion on the transgender group. There's a lot of focus on them, but first of all, they are being abused and mistreated in this country by others. They are being beat, hung, shot, killed, all kind of different things that are going on. And somewhere this has to fit into this picture that we're looking at. Where do you think it fits?
Well, I'll say, Dr. Rogers, when I ran in 2010 for state rep, and also ran in 2012 and 2000 for Congress, that that came up. They said, Tim, you know, you may be a nationalist, and you don't hide your red, black, and green flag and your star and your crescent. They said, but how do you feel about the LGBT community, whatever, you know, the queers, I don't know, all that stuff, man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I said, well, you know, listen, they are a part of my district, okay, and each his own. It's not my thing. I said, they vote for me, fine.
Mm-hmm.
They said, how you feel about same-sex marriages? I said, I disagree with all that. Okay, but, you know, I said, but they vote for me, it's fine. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. But now,
right.
I tell people when it comes to voting, I don't think people understand politics in America, especially the presidential on the federal level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Rogers and the rest of the brothers that are on this conversation and the listeners, that when Obama was elected, he had the House and he had Congress. And after he was elected, he said, I can sit down now. Can't do that. You got to vote in the midterm election. I bought one of my houses on a first-time buyer's home program, and the money I put down, $8,000 I put down, I got it back. He did that. He helped to stimulate the community, the economy with the housing. He also did it with the clunkers and the cars. You cannot sit back. What Ms. McConnell said, that before he even hit the White House door, he said, I'm coming after him. He will never pass, or he will not do more than 4 years. You have to vote in every election, Dr. Rogers.
Right.
Right. Here's the thing. You can't sit back and say, no. And here's the other thing. And Barbara Pelosi twisted the arms, the first and second term for the health care, when he didn't even have the House and the Congress in the second.
Right.
And people don't realize that he went against Bin Laden. I didn't like what they did to Gaddafi. I didn't like that with Hillary Clinton. But he went after Bin Laden. First of all, we would have never had Bush in office. We would have never had Bin Laden. Like you said, they're gangsters. They in bed with each other. Okay, but my thing is that if you want to control this thing at that game right now, because you know once we understand the rules of the game, they're going to change it. Play him at his own game.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And he's going to change it now, but you got to be on top of him and at his craft.
Right.
And guess what? While you can win, win. And guess what? While the getting is good, get it. Because some things don't come back, y'all.
Okay. All right, let's switch the tone a little bit. You got the Democratic debates on tonight. Brother Timothy, what do you think of Cory Booker?
Dr. Rogers, I like a man with a woman. I think he has a different sex decision than us. So he might have good policies and stuff, but I like to see men who are men and women who are men.
What do you mean?
You might like to speak that. I mean, you know, I don't look at him as a strong black man.
Why not?
I know it's hard to get that, and a strong black woman.
Right.
It's probably hard to get that, man.
What is it that you don't see?
So far in politics. I don't see his image. Image is very important to me, Dr. Robert.
Okay.
The image. I
got to
see an image here, man.
Well, but clear up for us just a little bit. You know, what is it about him that doesn't allow you to see the real strong black male image? What is it that he does or doesn't do that?
I hate to say this. My students always say, Mr. Hannah, I can't get along. This young lady said to me, Mr. Hannah, I don't like that girl. I said, why? It's something about her. I said, stop saying it. You don't even know the girl. I don't know the guy, but it's something about him. I hate to say it like that. I should know more as an educator, right?
Okay.
It's something. I gotta do some more research. Let me tell you something, Dr. Rogers, and listen to the audience and the people on the panel. The Democrats that are running now, I'm not all that impressed with them. I want Trump out the way.
Okay, I think that's
not really impressed with them. I want him out the way. I'll take any of them over him.
Okay.
Man.
So you definitely would not support a Pence, I'm sure. Yeah, okay. All right.
No. And let me tell you something, man. And I haven't seen, and listen to me, I happen to be a nationalist who happens to be a Democrat. Now, I like independent parties. I could never see myself being a Republican in this day and time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I say.
Okay, all right.
I am a Democrat because I I could see myself doing more things with them than the Republicans. Okay. I could work with some independents, not a Republican.
Didn't you tell me you ran for office once? Didn't you say you ran for office, I think, long
three time? Times. I ran for Congress in 2000.
Okay.
I mean, 2000.
Okay.
I ran for Congress in 2000, ran for state rep in 2010, and ran for state rep in 2012.
Great. Okay. All right.
And I ran for committee person. Actually, won that one.
Okay.
That was in 2000 and that was in 95 and 96.
Okay.
So I've been around with the activism and the politics. So okay. I believe in electoral politics in Philadelphia. You can do things in Philadelphia. You'd be surprised how many black electricians that we have. You think they're white people.
Okay.
But I can believe I can do something here if I can get in office.
All right. Okay, Brother Pugh, we opened up the program with that song from Sunhouse. He said he's, who's that writing in the book of the seven seals, you know, because it's all apocalyptic stuff. In reference to these Democratic candidates, let me just go to one. One of the guys that's talking and trying to say the right thing over everybody else is this guy, Andrew Yang. You got enough information to, what is he doing? Is this just a bunch of talk to get elected? What is Yang trying to say? He's an Asian.
Oh, yeah, I think Yang was one of Obama's people. So, you know, he's a good guy. He's got good, you know, his, you know, he's basically saying that, you know, the fundamental problem is automation.
Okay.
And that, you know, what you have to have is a guaranteed basic income.
Right.
And that, you know, so he's talking about, you know, an economic solution, saying that's the answer. My favorite candidate, in other words, the person of all of them that I think is the best is Elizabeth Warren.
Is who?
I think I mentioned on the show before that Elizabeth Warren fought bankers. She fought Obama and bankers. In other words, because Obama was supported by bankers.
Okay.
So when you go up against bankers, you're going up against Obama. And she not only fights, and by the way, these aren't these little marginal fights, these kind of these little symbolic victories. She was going at the heart of banking. She said their business model was a crime,
mm-hmm.
that the profits that they made was theft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the heart of banking.
Yeah,
Jesse Jackson,
yeah.
What he would do is that he would say, you bankers are making $100 and you are not giving the black community anything. Give us $3. Elizabeth Warren says, you bankers are making $100 and every cent of it is a theft. You shouldn't have any of it. And that's a whole nother level of game.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only does she fight, but she wins. In other words,
right.
These fights that she's been in, she wins, and so I'm really impressed with her. But on the other hand, my heart, you know, I just, you know, the ideal of really a black woman really is the antithesis of Donald Trump. The spirit, the opposite spirit of Donald Trump is a black woman, and so you know, if you had a Kamala Harris with black women behind her, I mean that would transform America, But Elizabeth Warren is going to do the same thing, because the only way a woman can get elected president is there has to be a transformation of the consciousness of America.
Yeah.
And that once that happens, the game is wide open.
Yes,
she's going to get that kind of Barack Obama. Now, Barack, he didn't play the hand he had. He had a hand, but he played it like, you know, like he didn't have one.
Yeah, he did.
But Elizabeth Warren can get the kind of hand that Barack Obama had.
Okay. Okay. Brother White, what you see? How you see that Democrat situation right now and all of that?
From a political standpoint, you have to start at the beginning.
Okay.
Where the problem started. So for me to back any politician on a federal level, the first thing they would have to do was denounce racism as the major problem in America. They would have to denounce the founding fathers as murderers, rapists, pedophile criminals.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to denounce the Constitution as a lying document that says we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. A big, fat lie. Right. So you would have to denounce all of that from the beginning and say, I'm going to overturn that and start brand new.
Okay.
If you're not talking like that, you're not talking about nothing.
Okay. Wow. Ooh. Okay. My brother from Alabama, and I keep calling you. What's your first name, my brother?
Ron Slaughter.
Okay, Ron.
But,
what do you think?
Well, in terms of all the candidates, for me, I mean, and I'm not having a personal choice, I try to look at it from the standpoint, what do we need to do? Who do we need to pick that can beat Trump? And so to me, in the end, I think when you look at the numbers, a lot of people that I like personally, but that has nothing to do with it, because if they can't pull the numbers and raise the money, then they don't have a chance, no matter what kind of policies or platforms or what they believe or preach.
Right.
In this game, it's about money and numbers. And at this point, you sort of have a top three. And whatever happens in terms of the final number, you know, when it gets down to those one or two, I may make a choice. But for me, it's ultimately whoever the Democrats pick out of that group. And yeah, it's going to be that's who we end up having to support to defeat Donald Trump. You know, aside from the, whatever particular, you know, aspects of the platform we may agree or disagree with. So I don't have a real problem with any of them. I'm not crazy about any of them. I'm letting the numbers game play out in terms of their ability to navigate this process. Just as we saw Trump come out of nowhere in terms of his appeal and his sentiment and his money, somebody's going to have to rise to the top in terms of the Democrats and going to have to be able to present what I want to see is somebody who can get in the mud with Trump and sling mud and act a fool with him on stage instead of trying to play this nice, polite game if you really want to win this thing.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. You think Bernie have that kind of fight, or is he really?
I hate to say it, but I think, you know, Bernie, you know, the age thing, the health issue, that's going to hurt him. Trump would definitely use that against him. You know, this heart attack is a serious thing. And so, unfortunately, I think that's going to hurt him. And I think, you've seen his numbers start to slide even prior to that. So I don't know if he can recover. And again, that's what I'm saying. You know, whoever can make the fight in the end, that's what we're going to have to ride with.
Exactly. And I think, as all of you have said, it's there's just really no clear-cut person. I know we didn't talk about Biden that much. Brother Timothy, how you like Biden?
I worry, Dr. Rogers, he's not doing so great in the debating.
No, he's not.
And it looks like Elizabeth Warren is sometime a couple points ahead. But watch those polls. You never know. And who could stand toe-to-toe with him? And I don't particularly like it. I think Kamala Harris could beat him like he said it, like a drum.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think a black woman, they'll let a black woman become a president. Just like I think I worry about a white woman running for president and becoming a president.
Mm-hmm.
So we might be left with Biden, who sometimes doesn't seem like he's so coherent. So that's what I'm saying. I worry about the Democrats, Dr. Rogers. In other words, when Obama came out, he might have did some things he wasn't perfect, but he came out like a superstar. I don't see that superstar.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm telling like it is. And I think it has to be a man and a woman. I don't think that we can have two women. And I don't know. We might be able to slip two men in, or a man and a woman. I don't think it could be two women, though. Maybe a man and a woman, but two men.
Right.
That's just me.
Okay.
I'm like you folks. I'm leery. And guess what? You can't underestimate Donald Trump, because we live in a racist society.
Yeah.
And guess what? The same white people that look at me and you thinking they're all right, they might go in there and do another thing when they get in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know.
Okay. Mr. Pugh, does all of this confusion and backward and forward in terms of what we're looking at now, the Trump potential impeachment, his attitude and role as the president in terms of relates to African Americans and just the weakness of the Democratic system, party in particular, does this present a good, strong argument for an independent black political party? Because I know we've looked at that before. We've even tried to have one. A lot of folks were saying the time wasn't right then. But you think this is a time to maybe review that? Is that possible in America in 2019, 2020?
Well, personally, no, I think it would be suicidal.
Okay.
I mean, we already saw that's how Trump got elected in the first place is, through the siphoning of votes. And also, you know, obviously, I think there was a 6% decline in terms of 2016 versus 2012, the black turnout. But also, you know, you had the what was her name now? The doctor, Jill Stein, and you know, you had all that. And you know, I mean, if Trump is winning by 70,000 votes, you know, those votes can you know these little marginal groups can actually have an impact. So no, I think that in fact there's a fella I heard something came out of Milwaukee the other day that I thought was pretty deep. I added a little something to it. He said, you know, now you want sovereignty, but you don't have the capacity to have sovereignty today. And so the next thing that you can want is separation, but you don't have the capacity to get separation either today. So the next thing you can get is solidarity. And then what I added to that is that, well, to get solidarity, you need to have self-knowledge. And so really, I think that what the black community needs to do, first of all, strategically, is when you identify that you want sovereignty, you specify what that means. Now, you know you can't get it today in 2019, but you're clear about what you want to get. This is what, by the way, any strategic thinker would do. Then the next thing you do is you do contingency planning, because the world is going to present to you opportunities. And some opportunities are going to lead toward your goals, and other opportunities are going to lead away from your goals.
Right.
Unless you know what your goal is. You know, right.
Okay. Brother Pugh, your phone is going out. I think I'm not sure if it's that. The phone, the switchboard. You're going in and out. Brother Pugh? Let me go over here to somebody else, Brother Pugh, because your phone is going in and out. Brother White, can you hear me? Hello, Brother White? Okay. I guess the conversation got too hot. There's something going on. Let me just see if the switchboard here has any answers to that. Brother White, can you hear me?
Yes. Hello?
Okay. Keep talking, Brother White. I don't know. We've got some challenges that interceded here somewhere. Try it again, Brother White.
Hello?
Okay, nope. Not getting it.
Hello?
Yeah, well, we may have reached our limit. I think I was still trying to hear that. I think there's some serious interference here somewhere. Not sure where it's coming from. But it is limiting our ability to hear. Brother White?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, now I hear you real well. Okay, good.
Okay. All right.
I don't know what that was.
I have only one qualification that a candidate has to meet for me to vote and support them.
Okay.
And that's honesty.
Okay.
Honesty. Truthfulness. Now, you tell me which one of them candidates that you believe is honest.
Okay. Yeah. That's a big one. That's a big one. That's a big one. And so you don't think the independent politic system would work in terms of us using
well, that? Well, like I said before, you have to look at what America is, what America's political aspirations are. Capitalism and imperialism, right. The direction of America. Nothing has changed under any president of the United States for America. Its policy has always remained the same. Aggression, theft, and imperialism. It's never changed from Democrat to Republican. Whoever was in office, the ideology remained the same. That's what America is about.
Okay.
It doesn't matter who the president is.
Okay.
One of them presidents said the business of America is business.
That's right. Number one goal.
Number one goal.
Right. Exactly.
It doesn't have nothing to do with providing for the people of America or the needs of the people and whatnot. The people are just the fools that rowed a boat.
Okay. Okay. All right. Brother Pugh, hopefully I didn't say something to Brother Pugh. Let me make sure I got you on the line.
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Good. Okay, I hear you. I don't know what that was before. On a serious tip, though, at what level do black folk come together in a unified front and begin to make some of the decisions about their independent political agendas? At what level? Where do we do that? How do we do it? Because you can't do it in the Democratic Club meeting, because that's controlled by outside. So at what level can we do that? Or do we need to do that?
Well, earlier today I was working on some lateral thinking problems. The problem was, given a piece of cake, is there a way that you can divide this cake into eight pieces just by making three cuts with the cake, right?
Okay.
And so the answer to the problem is that you need to think about cutting a cake, but you need to think about it in non-traditional ways. Well, that's kind of what we have to do. We have to play the game without the ball. And so that's why I said about this strategic thing is that regardless, in all of these different organizations that exist in American society today, there are opportunities for us to move the ball. In fact, here's a better example that I have. I wish I could give a more specific reference. But in Haiti, all the African people were enslaved in Haiti. But the Nigerian people, and I forget specifically whether they were Igbo or Yoruba, I'm not sure what specific people they were.
I think
but
it was Igbo.
One of the things they did was that they looked at the system, and then they figured out ways that they could buy the freedom of their people in the system, right?
Okay.
So in other words, you know what you want. And you know what the system is presenting. And so what you're figuring out is how you can essentially you move the system in the direction you want it. But the notion of assuming that the system has to be perfect or else, you can't, either you have it all or you have none, I think, that strategy is not going to be successful.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, right. You got to, and like I said, this is we present our program here as a think tank. And that's what we're doing. We're just trying to think about how do we do that. Like tonight, we're obviously raising some questions that, you know, the black community needs to be talking about. And as my brother from Alabama says, it does impact us in some way, our families, policies, rules and regulations, public policy issues, all come out of the system of politics. And so therefore, we need to be able to make some kind of a voice known to whoever sits in the seat, even whether it's the local level, the state level, or the national level. But there needs to be some area where we can come together and make that decision, you know, like I'm sure many other communities do, you know, many other political systems. And we haven't had that historically. The black church
Doctor, yeah. can I give you one example?
Go ahead. Go, please.
Now, this is an example from physics. This is a fellow named Frank Tipler, a physicist, who wrote a book called The Physics of Immortality.
Okay.
And what he was concerned about was, in other words, you've heard this stuff about the heat death of the universe, right?
Right.
That is to say that with time, the universe is getting colder and colder, and eventually it's going to die. And so what this fellow did is he theorized, he said, well, if we could get to the omega point of the universe, then we could reverse the heat death of the universe. But he said that way out there at the omega point, people are going to be so distant from each other that they're not going to be able to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
But because they have the same spirit, the same intention, they will be able to move in synchrony, even though they're not in touch with each other. And so you can imagine the same thing happening in our community, that there are people, you know, in Chicago and Los Angeles and whatnot, even when they're not in communication with each other, because their heart, you know, aspires to the same kind of thing, they begin making the same kind of moves. So what I'm suggesting when I talked about the lateral thinking is this ideal of assuming that in order for us to do something, we have to have a Congress and we have to have an army and we have to have some of these traditional structures that other people have. We need to recognize that, no, what we want is our objectives and the specific forms and the specific methodologies and means that we use to achieve it can be variable. And right. that's where our creativity comes in. Once again, the way to think about it is we need to learn how to play without the ball.
Okay, yeah.
And obviously, we've mastered that game.
Yeah, and we did. I remember as a kid, we used to sometimes play basketball. We didn't have a ball, or the ball was busted or something like that. It didn't have no air in it. So we made up something to play with, to play basketball. We played basketball, though, you know, but it wasn't the real thing. Okay, this has been a very dynamic discussion. I really appreciate all of you. I want to get closing remarks from each of you to see what you think. To kind of close out, you know, our program and give some concluding thoughts to this idea, you know, and to the whole thing where we started off to obviously discussing whether or not the President of the United States would be able to last out his term, or will he last it out and it just not be effective anymore. And so we've had some good input, and then obviously we have to talk about where African people stand in all of this. And You've given some good input. This program tonight will be archived. Say maybe by tomorrow you'll be able to get it from our archive and listen to it again, and you know, pass it on to some other folks because get their input, because we do need to start coming together in some way to make decisions about our future outcome in the political realm. And even if you're one of those that say, I don't want to participate in it at all, then you need to have some kind of an alternative plan that you can use and begin to discuss that with your community and those that may, you know, think like you. So with that, Brother White, you want to give us some closing remarks and I'll go around the room here a little bit and, in terms of this?
This is not our system.
Okay.
This is a system created by a psychopathic people.
Okay.
We are a spiritual people. You can't take
our spirituality and incorporate it into a psychopathic system and expect it to work. It don't work for us. It was not designed for us. It was not designed by people who think or feel like us.
Mm-hmm.
We can't make this thing work for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Great. All right. Thank you. Brother Pugh, closing thoughts?
Yes, I would, first of all, I'm not suggesting that you make the system work for you. We're talking about how you transform the system. But you essentially, you recognize that there are different ways you can transform. In fact, Sun Tzu, in fact, I was reading an op-ed piece today, I think in Wall Street Journal, and it was talking about China and about how China is essentially manipulating American policy without, without having to conquer America, right? And it quoted Sun Tzu in this sense of, you know, that if you're a good general, you're able to do things, you know, without, you know, firing a gun. So all I'm suggesting is that you know what you want to achieve. If you're a spiritual people and you want to live in harmony with nature, that's what you want to do. If you're living amongst people who want the opposite of that, then what you're essentially doing is you're creating a space. And by the way, that's what Milana Karinga was thinking about when he developed Kwanzaa. He said, we need to create culture. So in other words, in the same one else.
Okay, that's a good point, Brother Q, you were saying. I want to hear it, but your phone is messing up again. I can't hear you. Your phone is messing up. Let me go over here to see if Brother Timothy. Brother Timothy, can I hear you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it's not the phone; it's the system. Something wrong with the system here. But go on and try to give us your closing remarks, Brother Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
Not hearing you either. Okay. Not sure what that problem is. Brother Timothy?
Can you hear me?
Say it again. Nope. Not hearing you either, Brother Timothy. Right. Sorry about that. I don't know where the equipment is. Not in our equipment. I don't know where it's coming from. Maybe it's an internet issue. Let me see if I can hear the brother, my brother from Alabama. Brother, you want to close your remarks if I can hear you?
Well,
same thing.
Something
in the system here is not operating correctly. Well, to all of you, I appreciate your call. I don't know if you can hear me, but I appreciate you being on. We did have some challenges here at the end. Not quite sure what it is. We'll be back next week here on the Black Reality Think Tank. And we're going to talk about Sister Toni Morrison. I got a discussion on her for next week. So by all means, please join us. I really wish that we could conclude because, Brother Pugh, you were really on to something good. I wanted to hear that. But right now, the sound is not letting us do it. So we're going to do it. Brother Pugh, can you hear me again? No. Yeah, it's not doing it. Okay. All right, so have a good night, folks. We'll be back next week here at the Black Reality Think Tank, same time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And as I said, we'll be talking about Sister Toni Morrison and the work, the powerful work that she did, and the things that she left us, and looking at her legacy. So again, thank you all for calling in and being with us, and we'll see you next week.
Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as free, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as free, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. free.